See, that feedback thing means he's going to keep cranking my volume up until yours drops. It's the way of things. They're not, but they'll come back to me. Good to see you all here. Sandy is of the opinion that what few male friends I have left after last week, I will lose altogether after this week. Look, folks. We are in uncharted territory here. A lot of you heard me say things last week I didn't say. We were not talking about whether or not God had established male leadership in the home, given him the responsibility for oversight and direction. That's a given. Who do you know who preaches more on the role of human authority structures than me? Dead center in there is God's authority structure for the family. I didn't say anything about that. What I said last week was, we males go in there thinking we're not really very good at this, and our wives come into marriage believing the same thing. And everything God says to us is designed to reverse those roles. I will admit, I will concede, that perhaps what we did last week was not what could be considered a completely balanced presentation of all that God says to us concerning the family structure. I know that. It wasn't intended to be balanced. We are not balanced as a culture. We are not balanced as an American culture. We are just sick as an American culture. But we are not balanced as a religious culture either. And it is impossible, if we give a balanced presentation of some of the truths that God has for us, we don't hear them because we run them through the filters of what we already think we know, and in the end we hear nothing. So anyway, we're going to go back into this morning, and I'm looking forward to this. And the fact that you came back makes me think you are too. What was that? It's the donut. Well, at least we understand that, isn't he? Oh, my. Peter says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. As they observe your chaste and respectful behavior, and let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, or putting on dresses. But let it be... See, and folks, you know, for those who say, Peter's saying that you shouldn't put on jewelry and braid your hair. Well, then he's also saying you shouldn't put on dresses. See, that's obviously not what he was saying. He was saying... Well, we'll get into this morning, but... No. Let it be the hidden person of the heart, with an imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this way in former times, the holy women also, who hoped in God, used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. Thus Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. And you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear. Last week we began our study of the third chapter of 1 Peter, and with that study we entered into what I told you at the time was among the most difficult passages in the New Testament for us to correctly hear and understand. It's difficult not because it's intricate or because it's confusing, but because both our culture And much of our religious heritage has clouded our understanding of male-female relationships, and also because so many women have suffered so much from the dominance of insecure males who've used abusive relationships with females to try and bolster their weak self-images. And in our culture today, the more women attempt to counter that situation through seeking and asserting dominance over males, the more the males feel insecure, and it causes them to become even more abusive. We spent a lot of time last week looking at what Peter is not saying when he calls a wife to a submissive approach with a husband who is fighting against God. And then we finished up by looking at what he is saying and why he's saying it. But we ran out of time before we could finish with the rest of his closed-circuit communication to wives, and before we could look at the comments that he goes on to make to husbands. So, let's pick up where we left off. After encouraging the wives to seek to bring about growth in their husbands by offering them the example of their own lives, he then offers one other word of guidance specifically to women. He says, Let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair, wearing gold jewelry, putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. And obviously here again Peter is touching on one of those major differences between males and females. Females tend to be far more conscious of their physical appearance and more concerned about it. That's an understatement, folks. As a rather brain-dead male observer to the female world, I got to admit that a lot of times what I see just amazes me. There have been a number of times, several times, when I've been with my daughter somewhere, and some woman she has never met will see her and come on up and say, "Oh, I just love your hair. Where do you get it cut?" And they'd go into this huge dialogue over her hair and how neat it is and where she got it cut. And I got to tell you that never in my life have I noticed a man's haircut, unless there's big chunks out of it and it's real obvious. And then I think disease. And I got to tell you, where a man gets his hair cut is so far down my list of things I want to know, it'll make it onto the list about 120 years after I die. I could care less. You still from where, Paul? A little too much off the top? I better keep quiet. I'll get in trouble on that one. I've thought about... No, we're not going there. What do you do at this age, anyway? A few weeks ago, I was driving into town, and I was down here at the light at the corner where you got two lanes turning going into town across the bridge, and I glanced over at the driver on my right. And to my amazement, there was a lady in the car, and she had the sun... There was no sun, folks, but she had the sun visor down, and then I realized there's a mirror in the sun visor. So she's driving, and she's looking in this mirror, and in one hand, she's driving with one hand, but in that same hand, she's holding some kind of little thing that's got stuff in it, and at the other hand, she's got this little brush, and she's dabbing away, and frantically trying to put stuff on her eye, as she's driving with one hand, and trying to avoid hitting me on the left, and hitting the bridge on the right. And I thought, this is a different world from where I live. To say that men's and women's minds operate differently in these matters does not even begin to touch the truth. If Sandy didn't step in occasionally and give me some urgently needed oversight, I think I would still be wearing a really nice pair of double knit slacks I picked up in the early 70s. I mean, the things were bulletproof. Talking about getting mileage out of them, and they kind of stretched as you grew. Where are those things when you need them? That's what I want to know. Let me point out, first of all, that Peter is in no way criticizing women for their heightened concern about their physical appearance. He is certainly not telling the women that they shouldn't be concerned about the way they look. He is telling them that there is something far more important than what's on the outside. And there is a kind of beauty that is accessible to every woman, a beauty that has the power to impact your life for good far more powerfully than what's happening on the outside. Let your adornment be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Do you know what I think he's saying, women? I think he's saying that the true measure of your life is not found in whether you turn heads. It is found in whether you change hearts. There is a kind of beauty that will draw people's eyes to you. And that's never wrong so long as it is done with taste and with modesty. But there is another kind of beauty that comes from within. A beauty that comes from a heart of compassion and kindness and gentleness and love. It is a beauty that is accessible to every woman, no matter what her age or what cultural standards of beauty may be in vogue at any given time. A beauty that will draw people to you and give you healing power in their lives in a way that no external appearance could ever do. A few months ago, our 5-year-old grandson asked his mommy, my daughter, will I ever be as big as Gammy? And Joni replied, well, Maddie, someday you'll be as big as Daddy or as big as Pa. Maddie said, well, yeah, I know, but will I ever be as big as Gammy? You see, in a child's eyes, size has very little to do with height or weight. It has everything to do with how big an impact a person makes in their life. And for Maddie, there simply was no one bigger in the whole world than Gammy. And you know, this is at the very heart of what Peter is trying to say to the women he's writing to, because when it comes right down to it, the same principle applies to us at any age. Who are the really big people in your life? I mean, the ones whose impact and importance and true stature has nothing whatsoever to do with height or with weight. Who do you hope to one day be as big as? Who's the most beautiful person in your life? Someone whose beauty you would one day hope to achieve. It has nothing to do with what's on the outside, does it? In fact, here's truly amazing things, something that I've never realized so deeply as I have in a very personal way in recent years. When we have seen the inner beauty of another person, it powerfully affects the way we see them physically as well. When they are beautiful to us on the inside, they become just as beautiful to us on the outside, because their physical appearance simply brings to mind the impact that they've had on our life. And this applies not just to women, to all of us. I'm objective enough about this aging process to know that I've hit that time in life when I'm going through, well, what we might call a significant external deterioration. Just a few weeks ago, I had a friend of mine point out, you're looking a lot older, Larry. didn't know that. See, now at 62, I certainly don't view myself as old. But at the same time, I do realize that my earthly dwelling is, well, it's just a fuzz past its prime. But I have also become aware recently that there are a few people in my life who, when they look at me now, really like what they see, because what they see reminds them of the relationship we have. When Peter writes these words to his sisters in Christ, what he wants to do is to reveal to them a kind of inner beauty that will more dramatically impact the way people see them, I mean see them physically, than anything they could ever do with their external physical appearance. And he adds an interesting phrase in this passage to describe God's response to those who make their primary focus the hidden person of the heart. He tells us that who they become is precious in the sight of God. And you didn't even think maybe he noticed you, did you? And you certainly didn't allow yourself to think that he would call you precious. Yet he does. Because you are indeed precious in his sight. Highly valued, deeply treasured, someone who holds immeasurable wealth to him. So from there, Peter points back, for example, to some of the women in Jewish history who adorned themselves with that inner beauty. Interesting, isn't it, how skillfully Peter addresses what are certainly two of the most frequent concerns of women throughout history. How can I achieve real beauty, and how can I help bring real change in the life of my husband? And with both of these, he then shares insights that can dramatically change things for the better in a woman's life. And then Peter moves on to the husband. And to the husbands, he says, "You husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." And here, as with his comments to the wife, we need to begin by getting rid of some of the lies, the misconceptions, the incorrect assumptions that we bring to this passage. And let's begin with the big one in that verse, with Peter's description of the wife as a weaker vessel. And husbands, let me just go ahead and state openly what every man has known from the very beginning. Peter obviously doesn't mean that the husbands are smarter than their wives, or that they are more creative, or that they are more insightful, or that we are able to handle more emotional pain, or that we can handle more physical pain, or that we are more psychologically stable or healthy, or that being male, we are therefore in some way more qualified for life. In fact, when we're honest, most of us have discovered that our wives exceed us in most, if not all, of those areas, and many others as well. Years ago, I heard a radio broadcast which a medical doctor was describing the difference. I didn't like this broadcast, by the way, folks, but he was describing the difference in the development of the male and the female brain in the womb, and he said that with the male, there is a point in the developmental process in which the oxygen supply to the brain is shut off for a period of time, causing the retarding of the brain development in certain areas and causing the brain to then operate differently after birth. Which means, of course, that the scientific research confirms what all women have known since the Garden of Eden, that it is the male of the species who is brain dead in certain areas. And see, this is why I have no male friends. I see men shaking their heads and saying, What an idiot. To correctly understand what Peter is saying, we need to keep in mind who is writing to us. See, this is Peter. This is our friend Peter, the ultimate expression of what you see is what you get. This is not some university professor who is trying to make some kind of lofty, obscure psychological observations about the differences between male and female. This is Peter, the man we all know, the man who was in every way the absolute opposite of obscure. I must say I find it fascinating to see the way in which we males have worked so hard at redefining strength and weakness so that we can hide from so many of the things that are hardest for us. Look what we've done. See, we've actually convinced ourselves that having the freedom and the courage to express emotions is a sign of weakness. We tell ourselves that the woman is weaker because she is typically more free to express her emotions openly. We've even carried this stupidity to the point that if our developing son begins to express sadness or fear or emotional or psychological pain, especially if he dares to cry, we respond by saying, "Suck it up, be a man." Which means maleness is to deny our emotional responses. Put a cap on it. And if we keep on him long enough, we'll force him into the same lie that imprisons most adult males. I've been reading through the Psalms, folks. I gotta tell you, David, who was the ultimate expression of incredible male leadership in the Old Testament. You read through the Psalms, and this guy has got emotional freedom that it's just all right out there, folks. You know, he's just yelling and screaming and hating his enemies and calling down God's judgment on them at one point. You know, and then he is giving outbursts of praise and gratitude, highly emotionally charged expressions to God that are I read them and I can see them, but I couldn't imagine myself having the freedom to do that under any circumstances. A very, very different culture, very, very, a great deal more freedom than our culture allows us to have now. And our tendency is to raise our sons the way we have been raised and to embed in them that same lie that being strong means sealing off the emotions so that we feel nothing, never, ever let anything touch us deeply. I'm a rock, I'm an island, and a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. Typically, there are only two acceptable areas of emotional expression open to males in our culture: laughter and anger. But if you get near the two biggies, love, sadness, or emotional pain, most men in our culture simply shut down or run in terror because we don't even dare let ourselves feel those kinds of things deeply or know how to express them openly. Look what we've done in our culture. Created an emotional prison in which rarely do men have the freedom to say, "I love you so very much," even to the most important people in their lives. Sometimes, fighting our way out of that prison is the most courageous and terrifying thing a man can ever do. But my point here is simply to point out that our attempt to declare our wives as weak because they have greater freedom to express their emotions is just plain stupid. Strength is not the absence of emotions, and it certainly isn't the ability to cram them down inside and seal them off. True strength is the freedom and the courage to feel all things deeply, and then the ability to make the correct life choices within the context of those feelings. Okay, so then what does Peter mean when he says, that the woman is the weaker vessel. Mahalti means exactly what he says. The general rule, we men are physically stronger than our wives. Our vessel is stronger than their vessel. And his purpose here is to tell the men that God did not give the men greater physical strength so that they could then use that strength to force their wives into subjection to them. He gave them greater physical strength so that they could use that strength to protect and guard and defend and honor their fellow heirs of the grace of life. And with this one statement that was forever etched into the Christian message, Peter was drawing a line for all cultures, all times, all marriages in the family of God, a line that states simply, clearly, without exception, no Christian husband will ever use his physical strength to control or dominate or intimidate or abuse his wife. Such a thing is never acceptable for the child of God. And I got to admit that I was really naive in this whole area when I started pastoring years ago. Many years ago, I was in a conversation with a Christian man whose marriage was disintegrating, and in the course of that conversation, he made the statement. When I heard it, just made me sick. He said, "Now come on, Larry, are you going to tell me that you don't have to knock your wife around occasionally?" I got to tell you, I didn't have a clue as to what to say. I had not a clue. When Peter says, "You husbands likewise live with your wives in an understanding way as with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life," his message is clear and simple and direct. He is saying, men, understand this. God has given you greater physical strength, not so that you can dominate the woman, but so that you can protect and guard her. And then, to punctuate the importance of this comment, this instruction, this line that he is forever drawing between male and female, he does something that, to my knowledge, is never done anywhere else concerning any other issue in Scripture. He offers a warning of what will happen if this line is crossed. He says, he's saying, do not ever cross this line so that your prayers will not be hindered. And if you're hoping I can explain that, I'm probably going to disappoint you. But I'll tell you what I hear him saying. I hear him saying that if a man ever convinces himself that it is acceptable behavior to use his physical strength to control or dominate a woman, he has lost his ability to correctly know and follow the voice of God in his life. His personal communication with God will become so corrupted and so confused that his spirit will not recognize or respond the voice of God's spirit within him. It is not an irreversible condition, but it is a very serious one indeed, and one requires major healing work of God in the man's life. And then, after offering such strong warning, but the tragic results of doing it wrong, he offers a wonderful affirmation of how to do it right. He tells those of us who are husbands that what we are supposed to do is to grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. And here again, this one requires us to back off from our own insecurities enough so that we can see and trust, hear, respond to what the Spirit of God is saying to us in our mate. I can say that more simply, men. It means that we're supposed to listen to them. Not just to listen to them, but to honor them for what they truly are. The clearest human channel for the voice of God in our life that we'll ever have. And I'll tell you right now, husbands, that God delights in setting us up on this one. In fact, I'd go so far as to say that God has designed the husband-wife relationship in such a way that the wife is a husband's doorway into the correct understanding of the personal leadership of the Spirit of God in his life. After 33 years of marriage, become so much a part of my own life, I rarely even think about it consciously anymore. With every significant decision I make in life, I first want to know how Sandy responds to what I'm thinking. And I'm not just talking about family matters, I'm talking about everything from financial decisions, career decisions, to my people involvement, to where and how I invest my time. And the key here is our doing that one thing that we so often find it so hard to do. We need to listen. You can listen not just to the ideas, but to our wife's true heart attitude. Because so often I have found that God will tell Sandy things that I desperately need to hear, and I can only hear them if I'm willing to trust His voice through her. Husbands, likewise, live with your wives in an understanding way. It's with a weaker vessel, since she is a woman. Grant her honor as fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. So Peter gives his critical communication both to the wives, to the husbands within the family of God. Oh, that's all I needed. That's good. I can end with that. All right, let's close in prayer. Father, Father, thank you for your design that's made us male and female. Thank you for your Spirit's ability to give us clear, perfect understanding as to what it means to have wise stewardship over our maleness, our femaleness. Teach us, Lord, what that means in our marriage relationships. What we want, Father, is to make those choices that make it easiest for both us and for our mate to grow and develop under the leadership of your Spirit. We need you to accomplish that within us. We thank you so much for your commitment to do that. We love you, Lord. We pray in Christ's name.